I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
No matter how spurious, how completely unjust, how ridiculous these cases are. I mean, this Manhattan DA case about Stormy Daniels, you know, a supposed assignation 17 years ago, you know, it's so threadbare that no one has touched it. But it doesn't really matter to them because they want to give the Trump haters, they want to keep that hatred going up until 2024. And, you know, I don't know whether they're so blinded by their hatred that they don't realize that they're actually assisting Trump and making him more popular, making his base more loyal to him.
I think exactly that is what is going to happen. Those are the words of Miranda Devine with the New York Post. This is March 20, 2023. Thanks for joining us. We are focusing, of course, on the indictment, which could come down, and tomorrow Trump be, quote, arrested on this 17-year-old charge that he supposedly gave money and via an attorney to porn star Stormy Daniels for her silence. This is what they're focusing on in Manhattan, the biggest crime they have facing them. Even Vice President Pence weighing in on this possible indictment of Trump. The former vice president had this to say.
I'm taken aback at the idea of indicting a former president of the United States at a time when there's a crime wave in New York City, that the fact that the Manhattan DA thinks that indicting President Trump is his top priority, I think, is just tells you everything you need to know about the radical left in this country. It just feels like a politically charged prosecution here. And I, for my part, I just feel like it's just not what the American people want to see.
No, it's not what they want to see. But that's what they're doing in Manhattan. And House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, Republican, California, saying again, Alan Bragg, the prosecutor in Manhattan, is abusing his office, targeting President Trump while he's reduced a majority of felonies, including violent crimes, to misdemeanors. In other words, he has different rules for political opponents. And don't look to the state attorney general, Letitia James, to weigh in and say that the DA is doing right. You know what she was spending her time doing yesterday? She was at a drag show, a storytelling hour for children, and even brought along members of the city council and others, and brought along state police and so forth to help protect them, to read stories to children for drag queens and to share their views on life. That's what they're concerned with. Now, a lot of folks are saying, what's DeSantis got to say about this? Because DeSantis can either make or break his future on where he stands with Trump on this. Here's where DeSantis stands, and you're going to hear him say clearly, this is political persecution.
You have a prosecutor who is ignoring crimes happening every single day in his jurisdiction, and he chooses to go back many, many years ago to try to use something about porn star hush money payments. You know, that's an example of pursuing a political agenda and weaponizing the office. And I think that that's fundamentally wrong. The Manhattan district attorney is a Soros funded prosecutor. And so he, like other Soros funded prosecutors, they weaponize their office to impose a political agenda on society at the expense of the rule of law and public safety. He has downgraded over 50% of the felonies to misdemeanors. He says he doesn't want to even have jail time for the vast, vast majority of crimes. And what we've seen in Manhattan is we've seen the crime rate go up, and we've seen citizens become less safe.
Governor DeSantis, who could be an opponent against Donald Trump, makes it clear that he thinks, yes, Trump is being persecuted simply because of politics. Miranda Devine wrote a piece for the New York Post and an op-ed saying a potential Trump indictment is a sideshow gift to the Biden family. So for the Democrat spin machine, it was time for a Trump scandal. Keep the voters in the dark about the real scandal swirling around Biden. Miranda Devine.
the Democrats just don't have a defense for Joe Biden. I mean, we have not heard one word to explain in over 2 years what was going on, why Joe Biden was meeting with Hunter's business partner, what was the meaning of all these millions of dollars that was flowing through to his son Hunter, his brother Jim, and now we find his daughter-in-law, who also happened to be Hunter's lover at one point, Hallie Biden. So as James Comer and the Oversight Committee continue to subpoena bank records and follow the money trail, you can see the White House and Joe Biden becoming increasingly unhinged, really.
And unhinged is exactly right. In fact, Biden was asked the other day, what about all these records and bank records? He said, it's a lie. The bank records are a lie, Joe? Is that right? Well, we have the Chinese leader, Xi, meeting with Putin in Russia. And one of our longtime frequent guests and friends of the show, Gordon G. Chang, was on Fox News talking about the timing of this meeting.
The thing here that's really fascinating is that the announcement of this trip of Xi Jinping going to Moscow for 3 days was just a few hours before the announcement of the arrest warrant for Vladimir Putin by the International Criminal Court. The Chinese knew that this was obviously going to occur. So what this is basically saying is we, China, are supporting genocide and war crimes committed by Russia in Ukraine.
Yes, they are. And, of course, they're trying to act like we're going to broker peace. They have no interest in brokering peace. The statement from Premier Xi is, we stand ready with Russia to, quote, stand guard over the world order based on international law. International law says Putin should be tried for crimes against humanity. We, of course, have our banks still upside down as to what happened with Silicon Valley Bank. There are more concerns about other banks that might be going upside down. They're on a watch list. If regulators insured all deposits of all sizes, similar to what happened with Silicon Valley Bank and Signature customers, that might make customers feel more confident. But then again, if you do it for one bank, you're going to have to do it for more, which is exactly the opposite of what Biden said would happen the other day, saying there will not be a bank bailout. But we do hear that they are going to be paying out Chinese depositors in the Silicon Valley Bank even before Americans get their money. Does that sound right to you? Oh, no, it doesn't. Coming up, Federalist Senior Legal Correspondent Margot Cleveland. She says time is running out to speak freely about free speech in America. That's a clear warning. Lock and load. Ready on the right. I want to share something special with you. I've told you how Wellington Environmental works to keep hospitals, schools, businesses safe for their patients, students, clients, employees. Wellington can do the same for you. Perfect example. A relative went to the basement, almost knocked over by the smell. A sewer line had broken. A call to Wellington, a crew was dispatched. First thing, make the home safe. Then clean up the mess. Truly clean it up. Now, I'm telling you this because I want the best for you. Wellington Environmental. Here's the number, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Your world. Cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
You can text Larry right now at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Baby, I got your number. Oh, and I know that you got mine. You know that I called you. I called too many times.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. My guest we've had on before, and I definitely want you to hear this piece she wrote today for The Federalist, is Margot Cleveland. She is a senior legal correspondent for The Federalist, and the title is Time is Running Out to Speak Freely About Free Speech in America. And below that, Americans need to have an important discussion about free speech now, before the censorship complex makes it impossible to do so. Wow. Margo, thank you again for being available for us.
Oh, thanks so much, Larry.
Well, when I read you talk about the censorship complex, a lot of things come to my mind. What are you identifying as the censorship complex?
I am identifying the entire group in America that is working to censor speech. That includes everyone in the federal government, basically. We have big tech, so we have Google, we have Yahoo, we have the different web browsers. We have social media, so Twitter and Facebook. We have for-profits and nonprofits who have kind of jumped on this disinformation money bandwagon. And unfortunately, a large group of the media who no longer cares about free speech.
Not only that, they don't care about truth.
True. Very true.
I mean, they just don't. I mean, it's like, the New York Times took 18 months to acknowledge, oh, yeah, that Hunter Biden laptop thing, that was real.
And I don't know if they've even admitted yet that the Russia collusion hoax was a hoax.
Yeah, no, I don't think they've done that. They want to move past that. Trump's facing a possible indictment for something involving a possible exchange of money for Stormy Daniels, a prostitute 17 years ago. That's front page issue for them. Why?
Well, you know, I think that what we're looking at with New York's prosecutor is really turning in prosecutors into political vendetta machines. And it's sad that the New York Times does not see a problem, because if they do indict Trump, we are moving to the banana republic stage in American history.
You note several things in this article. And again, this is Margo Cleveland, senior legal correspondent for The Federalist. You lay out some scenarios, and you say these scenarios and others show the government has an incentive to deceive the country. That in itself is a frightening statement. I'll let you explain.
Well, I think that it sounds frightening until you look at the hypotheticals that I gave and say, well, yeah, there are times that the government is going to try to deceive the public. And if you just think back to COVID, we had them doing it. They wanted to deceive the public about the effectiveness of vaccines, the effectiveness of masks. Maybe they thought it was in the country's best interest, but it's not their decision to decide what speech we get and what speech that we don't get. And we saw it last week when there was a discussion with the FDIC about the Silicon Valley Bank. And a congressman from Arizona, Senator Kelly from Arizona said, well, do you have in place a way to, you know, get this off of social media if there's notes about a bank run going on? Now, he, of course, covered it with, well, we mean form, you know, disinformation campaigns. But our government is not distinguishing. We saw that with Hunter Biden. We saw that with the COVID. They don't care if it's Americans doing it or if it's foreigners doing it.
So before,
and they don't care if it's true.
So before you joined us, I was running a clip of Chuck Todd on NBC Meet the Press over the weekend, talking to Senator Rounds of South Dakota, talking about this remarks by Trump about, I might be facing charges tomorrow, being arrested. Protests take our nation back. And he says, isn't he fomenting violence like January 6th again? I mean, what words they do use, they twist and turn, they amplify, they over-exaggerate if it fits the narrative for them.
Absolutely. And you could see the scenario where Trump talks about exercising the right to petition, your right to free speech, and that is turned into threats of violence. And that's what we're talking about with misinformation, disinformation, mail information, anything that could be interpreted as being a threat for violence, they will want to shut down. And here, protesting has nothing to do with violence.
No.
Now, I actually had said... Right, exactly. I had actually said, you know, I wouldn't do it because you know the media is going to come out. And if anybody engages in violence, including people from the other side who are trying to make Trump supporters look bad, it's all going to be played as if that was what Trump said. But one of my followers corrected me and said, you know what, we don't give up our First Amendment rights that easily. I'm like, well, that's a fair point, too.
Yeah, I agree. But if anyone gets out of line, there was video that had not been shown to the general public that I saw over the weekend, some of the video that of the 42,000 hours of video from January 6th when the January 6th committee said there were only 19,000 hours. Well, that was wrong. And some of it showed a man trying to break a window at the Capitol. He was dressed, quote, with a MAGA, but some are saying he might not even, he might have been a plant, could have been a federal agent, could have been a leftist, but he's trying to break the window. Others are pulling him away, shouting, we don't do that. We're not here to destroy the Capitol. But that never got great play.
No, it didn't. And it's unfortunate because it has prevented an honest discussion of the few bad actors, the ones that should be rightly condemned and ensure that never happens again. And I think that was done for good reason, because this way you can't have those on the right saying, we don't stand for this, because they've presented it as if everyone who attended the rally was a bad guy. And that, again, is why this whole censorship complex is so dangerous, because that narrative is out there so that if anyone writes in support of protesting, they are then going to be branded as fomenting violence.
I have a very close relationship with someone, and we got into this discussion, and she was angry and said, don't you get it? Trump is trying to incite riots on the street. I said, no, he's not. And where did he say? He wants everybody to riot. I said, where do you? In his tweet, I said, here's his tweet. Where does it say riot? It says nothing in there about riot. It says protest, take back America. That's all it says. Well, that means riot. Well, that's your interpretation. I mean, that's, and again, you go back to the summer of 20 when we had all these cities, 500 plus on fire, burning and everything else, and Maxine Waters and Nancy Pelosi, their attitude was, well, people are going to do what they're going to do. That, so be it. So it's acceptable in that way to protest.
Exactly. That we have to, again, be condemning the people that are doing the bad. But instead, they've kind of gotten us pulled off from doing that by making everyone the bad guy, and by making Trump as, you know, the commander in riot, almost, that, you know, he's the one who is speaking out and asking for this. And it's not true. We have a right to protest. We have a right to free speech. But the threat really is much more than that, because most of the way people get their news now is through the internet. And when the government has the ability to track and force censorship, yes, or get censorship through cooperation, we are at risk of losing our rights to free speech.
And journalists, as you point out, are supposed to be, from the beginning, the founding of America, the free press was to be a check on government. And when I got into the business, I mean, we're talking about a few decades ago, shortly after I got off the Conestoga wagon, let me put it that way. Bottom line is, I thought it was a great profession to get into because I want to seek the truth and get both sides of the story. But as you point out in your article, journalists, which I agree with you, I'd put it in quote if I even use that term, they became more open to burying or spinning the stories, protect favored politicians and policies, and the rise of social media, as you point out, you know, they're adding roadblocks to both government abuse and biased and false reporting. Hopefully that's going to stand up, but they will shut them down too at some point.
Absolutely. We're seeing that with the supposed raiders of what is truthful and what is deceptive. And it's unfortunate because it is based on what is the, and I'm using my air quotes for mainstream view,
right?
Because the mainstream view isn't anything but the view of a few elites of what they want the Americans to believe. And it really is going to affect the ability for people to communicate if they are able to shut down the communications that have been very organic on the internet about events. COVID was just the perfect example.
Because
it wasn't a matter of violence or terrorists or foreign countries trying to take over America, but it was the few elites who would refuse to let the ordinary people discuss and have differing viewpoints, and they ended up being, the experts ended up being wrong.
Yes,
so I don't know what America needs to see beyond what happened with COVID to realize you can't let the government, the social media companies, big tech, and the, you know, the legacy journalists make the decision of truth.
When they're weaponizing journalists, when they're weaponizing social media, it's destroying not only the belief in America and the faith in America and American leadership. You mentioned COVID in particular, CDC, where we rely upon health information, legitimate, true health information, now has become a mockery. No one trusts the CDC or the government in any fashion. That's not good for our country, but that's where we are. Absolutely. At this point. That's where we are, but my concern is where we're going.
Absolutely. You could add the FDA to that, and that there's more vaccine hesitancy on vaccines that are definitely safe and definitely have are better for children. But parents rightfully are concerned now because they see that they've been lied to. And why should they take the truth out there? But you've got to look that they were doing this around the election as well. They're going to do this around, even in the kind of speech that we're having now, the condemning of the censorship complex. I actually came about and noticed that Russia Today referenced an article I wrote, and I'm like, oh, great, because you know, I hate Russia's leadership and, you know, believe that Putin is evil. And yet what our government is doing is saying, okay, you're saying something that they like, so that means that you are in bed with them, and that makes you a Russian apologist, which is the furthest thing from the truth.
Yeah.
But we don't defeat Russia by becoming Russia, and that's what we're seeing.
I agree fully, and there would be a time that this entire conversation would have been blocked out, and it may well come. I thank you very much for taking your time, and again, folks, the article appears in The Federalist. I encourage you to read it in its entirety. Margo Cleveland, as always, we appreciate your expertise and knowledge.
Great. Thanks so much, Larry. Take care.
You bet. We'll do it again. Margo Cleveland, talk about free speech before you lose the opportunity. Ackerman Toyota wishing you a great 2023, but Jay Ackerman knows that times are tough for some. So Jay has a mission to help charities that truly make a difference. Food banks, veterans groups, charities battling cancer, head injuries. Jay wants to give back to the community. So I personally ask you to consider his mission when you're shopping for a car. AckermanToyota.com. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and Interstate 44. Ackerman Toyota. For life. This time of year, heavy rains, high winds, they can hit. And if you have any loose shingles, even the smallest hole in your roof, you're taking a major gamble with your biggest investment. I can tell you from personal experience, do not wait until you have water where it shouldn't be. Don't forget that John Beale has disaster crews, which can at least cover your roof until the damage can be fully repaired. Homeowner, business owner, call John Beale, 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Hit the road, Jack. Don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say?
Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack.
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Well, leave it to Congresswoman Maxine Waters, Democrat of California, to make the statement that all the left wants to hear. Donald Trump is trying to incite another January 6th. She said when he announces he's likely to be arrested and charged falsely and telling his people to organize, he's attempting to organize his domestic terrorist, as she calls them, to show up and resist him being arrested. You had to be careful with him, Maxine Waters said. And I quote, you know what she's referring to? Donald Trump issuing a quote on his social media over the weekend, talking about how he's going to be possibly charged tomorrow, indicted, maybe arrested, with the allegations that he gave money to Stormy Daniels and lied about it. The prostitute. Well, he did put out on his tweet machine, protest, take our nation back. That's all he said as far as doing anything. Protest, take our nation back. You have a right under the First Amendment to have a protest. That's a peaceable assembly. If you start throwing Molotov cocktails and battling police, your First Amendment right comes to an end. But nowhere in there did he say anything like, let's do January 6th again or anything like that. Nothing. But Maxine Waters and the left, they're just hoping. They're hoping folks will get out of line. And I'm encouraging you not to do so. And in fact, George Washington law professor Jonathan Turley said, I do call on Trump to tap down any inflammatory rhetoric. I wouldn't consider what he put out in that statement inflammatory rhetoric, just saying, protest, take America back. That's all it says. Now, you can read anything into it you want to, but just read the words. But I will tell you this. The University of Law professor, George Washington, Jonathan Turley, also said the Manhattan District Attorney's case against Trump is legally pathetic. Pathetic. He said, I'm highly critical of this case. It is potentially flawed. It is based on a state charge effectively prosecuting the federal election violation. That federal case was rejected by the Justice Department. There are also statute of limitation questions that could come into play. And he points out the prosecutor Bragg might be able to expect highly motivated judges and jurors in New York to support him. Yep, that's probably true. Won't be hard to find them. You scratch anyone in New York, you're probably going to find a liberal. But he adds that the novelty and questions in this case would present difficult issues if you had to appeal. He says it's just not going to work. Turley said again, and I repeat, these issues are some of the most discussed potential charges in the case, and they're all legally pathetic. He said, we don't know the specific state charges they might come up with, but it would probably be based on the claim that Trump used legal expenses to conceal alleged hush payments supposedly used to violate federal election laws. But he also pointed this out, and hear me on this one, please. While some legal experts have insisted such concealment is clearly a criminal matter that must be charged, they were conspicuously silent when Hillary Clinton faced a not dissimilar campaign finance allegation. Oh, yes, we remember that, don't we? Those are the words of Jonathan Turley, law professor. He also said, Bragg's office basically cannot charge this as a misdemeanor because the statute of limitations is 2 years. If he's going to indict Trump and arrest him and charge him on this case, he's going to have to list it as a felony. That would carry possibly 4 years in jail if convicted. But as he said, it would be easy enough to overturn on any appeal. It's already been looked at several times, pushed aside, and said there's nothing there we can do with it. So why are they doing it? Well, as you heard Miranda Devine earlier in today's program say, the Democrats don't have anything left to run on. They got to get the spin machine up and create some kind of scandal around Trump, trying to hide the real scandal that is constantly now swirling around Joe Biden and the Biden family and all of the influence peddling. That's why. So let's turn to the situation involving our border and lack thereof under the Biden-Mayorkas effort to secure the border, which they have not done. It is this next story, you look at it and you think, what? What? Mayorkas has been insisting we're doing everything to protect America. He's being challenged by a leftist who's all about more illegals coming in and demanding that Biden do something to help more get in, or they're going to try to disrupt his reelection campaign. Did you hear me correctly? Leftists are saying, if you don't let more illegals in, Mayorkas, you're keeping too many out. Really? If you're keeping too many out, we will do everything we can to disrupt the Biden reelection campaign. Well, you talk about being squeezed from both sides. Mayorkas has testified repeatedly before Congress, the border is safe, it's safe, and you can, we aren't, but it's secure, but it may not be safe. Or maybe it's safe and it's secure. Maybe it's silly putty, whatever. He has no idea. And yet he does. He knows he's violating his oath of office to protect this country from all enemies, domestic and foreign. And yet he's being called out by the left that you're not doing enough to get more illegals in. Mayorkas outlined, look, we have a, he literally said, there are many exceptions and loopholes of the promised curbs that are coming. He urged progressive, hey, manage your own ambitions a little bit. Help us out here a little bit. Good God. He said, we've done so much and we have so much more to do that we will do. And he's arguing with this former ACLU lawyer who says you need to let more illegals in. And saying that I want Biden to do what he said he would do and make it a fully open border, but you're putting in some curbs and so forth. But at the same time, Mayorkas is trying to tell him there are a lot of loopholes in there you can get around, but how do you propose we handle 8,000 people each day when we're not funded for Congress? Congress won't give us some money for it. No kidding. 8,000 a day. We already have 4.5 to 5 million that have come in through the Biden administration so far. And the response from Mayorkas to this leftist lawyer who wants more illegals to come in, he's trying to work both sides of the aisle, telling Republicans, no, the border is secure and safe, or maybe not safe, but it's secure, and we're doing our best, and we're getting a lot of illegals that shouldn't be here out of the country. Well, that's not what this lawyer wants to hear. I want to hear that you're going to let everybody in and you're not going to do anything to them and you're going to give them all the stuff and this and that and that. This is a perfect example that the left is never going to be satisfied. It's like a kid. Gimme, gimme, gimme. Well, we have a cookie. We need to cut it in half between you and your sibling, your brother, your sister. Now, the rule should be one kid cuts it and the other one makes a decision on which piece they want first. That way, you're probably going to have it equal. Right now, it's like going back to a Three Stooges bit that they're going to split a milkshake. And one drinks everything. They were upset. Why'd you drink the whole thing? So, well, my third was on the bottom. Yeah.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
So put this on your calendar, May the 1st. Napoli C will open on the streets of St. Charles, right next door to Napoli 3. Napoli C will have the finest seafood, lobster, crab, caviar. May 1st, Napoli C opens on the streets of St. Charles, right next door to Napoli 3, which is also open for lunch and on Sundays. You can find me at Cafe Napoli. In Clayton, Town and Country, Streets of St. Charles, and then May 1st, Napoli C.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So here's one of these stories that tell you exactly where we are when it comes to law and order in this country. There's a correspondent for a network. I'll get to that in just a moment. They were going out to do a report in San Francisco on the city's rampant crime problem because in San Francisco, you can shoplift if it's less than $1,000, no one's going to charge you. You can steal, you can do this and do that. No one's going to charge you. If they do, they're going to take your name and say, go about your way and please do no more harm. And yeah, right, they're going to. So a tweet came from this correspondent. Got robbed again. Pointing out that we were at City Hall in San Francisco to do an interview. We had security watch our rental car plus a crew car. Thieves, within under 4 seconds, security stopped the jerks from stealing other bags, but seriously, this is ridiculous. And they show a picture on her tweet, the car's back window smashed in, glass everywhere, all happening within seconds. They said their security guard tried to grab the cooks, but had resorted to just taking a photo of the license plate as they raced away in their getaway car. She adds, to the jerks who stole our stuff, we hope someone on the site sees your plate and you get caught. San Francisco is a beautiful city. This is our third day here. But if you do visit this city, know that even with security guards watching your car, it's not enough. That is a shame, isn't it? I might add, the reporter was there on behalf of CNN and NNN. Yes, she was there to cover how crime is bad in San Francisco. Well, I think they got a first-hand look, did they not? And do I hear CNN and NN going after all of these Soros-elected DAs for letting all these folks run free all the time? See, when it comes to your own backyard, sometimes your perspective changes, doesn't it? Of course, she doesn't have to pay for it. She didn't lose any of the equipment. CNN did. Remember our pledge, one nation under God.